Okay, we're continuing in the Sefer Bilvavi Mishkan Evna on page Lamed Tes. And the Tzaddik ended off in Lamed Ches. The person has to really ask himself, do they really want this kind of life of living close to Hashem? And if you don't, then you have to daven for it. So now we continue to attempt to get people to get closer to this concept. Lamed Tes on page Lamed Beis. The Nasa Lakariv is Adam Lakach. We want to attempt to bring a person closer to this issue. She Yirtza Leos Karav Vadavak LaKadosh Baruch Hu, that a person should want to become close and attached to Hashem. So here's his attempt to persuade you. Kol Echad Meitanu Yodeh. Every one of us knows. She Yavo Yom Vuhu Yazov Es Olam Azeh. There'll come a day where the person will have to leave this world. As we know, Sof Kol Adam Lamisa, the end of every person is death. Now, what do we want to have after we leave this world? What do we want and what do we don't want? V'nei kol echad rotza l'achar misasa linotzel min Gehenna. So everybody obviously would like to be able to escape having to go to Gehenna. V'liskos began Eden, and to merit to go into the Garden of Eden. Okay, good. That's what you all want, right? So the question is, Ma yaseh adam in Gan Eden? So what does a person do in Gan Eden already? What are we doing in Gan Eden already? Kasav haramchal, v'reish sefer mesilas yesharim. So Moshe Chaim Lutzato, in his sefer mesilas yesharim, in the beginning says, She'adam lo nivra el lisanig al Hashem. Person was only created, but for the purpose to delight in Hashem, v'lehanos meziv shchinasa, and to delight in the splendor of his divine presence. Okay, that's what we were created for. To enjoy that closeness to Hashem. Vizel Iker Hatanug Began Eden. This comes out to be the main enjoyment in Gan Eden. Yotze comes out. Shim Adam Eina Davak Bakodesh Baruchu Ba'emes. If a person is not attached to God, truly, Gamba Gan Eden in Harbi Malasos. So even in Gan Eden, there isn't too much to do. There isn't a lot to do. Okay? Because if you don't enjoy being close to God now, you know, it's not going to be what for you to do when you get to the world to come. The Slonimer Tzadikim teach us, for example, that if a person never really experienced a true Oneg Shabbos in this world, he never experienced a true delight in the Shabbos in this world. Even though he was a good guy, right, and goes to Gan Eden, you will go to Gan Eden, but you're going to sit in the world to come, the expression he uses, like a shtick holz, like a piece of wood. Could be like a piece of wood. And next to him is going to be a guy who's going crazy. He's so happy. He's in ecstasy, the real ecstasy, right? And he's looking at the guy, wow, what's he so excited about? He's wondering what's going on. And he'll feel like he's not included in the program. That's going to be a person who never really delighted in the Shabbos. Now that's just delighting in the Shabbos is just a litmus test for saying if a person is close to God in this world. Delighting in the Shabbos, you know, is more than just, enjoying a few songs in shul, having a good meal, having a good shluf in the afternoon, and socializing with friends. That is not really the be-all and end-all of Oneg Shabbos. Right? Oneg Shabbos is when you really feel this closeness to God. Oneg Shabbos means, you know, and again, this is the litmus test, and I'm really sorry to tell you this. The litmus test is, in the summer, you bring in Shabbos early when you have the chance. Not because you're hungry. So how do you know if you really mean it? On Matzah Shabbos, in the summer, If Shabbos over 10, I'm not ending till 11. Because I don't want it to end. If you really like something, you don't want it to end. Right? And especially in the winter, where Shabbos is already ending at 5:30, 6 o'clock. Right? And you're not rushing to end the Shabbos. Because this is how beautiful the Shabbos is to you. You know, like in sports, again, nobody ever minds, right, a game going into triple overtime. You know, especially an important game. Right, mamish, a Stanley Cup game going into overtime. This is, it can't get, the expression they use, it doesn't get better than this. Right? Seventh game, extra innings, overtime, in any sport, doesn't get better than this. Right? Because we're extending it a little more. We're not ending it so soon, right? Or let's look at one's own simcha that one makes. Right? One makes a simcha. They never want it to end. And the simcha continues. He got called up late on Shabbos, and then they make a party Saturday night, and then for out of town guests Sunday morning, and it goes on, it goes on. I'm not saying not. But I'm saying, see, when you really like something, you don't want it to end. That's the only thing I'm saying. Right? So, you know, if certain things, you know, simchas and hockey games, you know, where the appropriateness is to extend it, I'm not going to get into, and it's not important for now. But what is important, though, when you really want something, and when you're really taking pleasure, you don't want the moment to end. That we know. Right? So therefore, so how do you treat Shabbos? You treat Shabbos at least like a bar mitzvah? Right? I mean, it's better than a bar mitzvah, because it's you're in the world to come. Right? Is it better than a hockey game? Right? So if and the preparations that go involved into Shabbos, right? Are you going to work that day that your kid's getting married, or you're not going to work that day, or at least taking off a half a day, and leaving early the day your kid's getting married, right? Well, no, I'm going to work. I'm working till 6 o'clock. The wedding's at 6:30. The Kabbalah's prime is at 5:30. Okay, I'll get off of work at 5. It takes 29 minutes from the highway to get in. I'll already be shaved and showered. I'm walking in at 5:29. I'm the father of the bride. Better yet, I'm the bride. Yeah. You're crazy. You're crazy, right? I mean, just don't do that. You know, you got to be ready. What if this? What if that? You got to be mentally ready. You got to be prepared. You got this, right? Comes Erev Shabbos, which is your chasana. Every Shabbos, I'll come in the last minute. Okay, I'm not saying if the job boss won't let you and you're not able to, blah, 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 all those things. I'm not going to talk about that. But even with all those excuses, what's the excuse for Matzah Shabbos? That one I don't get. That one I mamish don't get. So now where do you have to go to work Matzah Shabbos? No, we got a movie we got to see. It's 7 o'clock. We're invited to a malav. We're invited to friends. It's very nice. So now, like, where do you draw the line? Where do you say, no, Shabbos is important? So that's what the Slonim are saying. If it's really an Oinig Shabbos, I mean, why would you want it to end so early? And it's like, listen, we can't legislate it. There is a halacha. Shabbos ends at 5:42, whatever it is. Technically, you're not desecrating the Shabbos when you do whatever you do at 5:42. Right? But if you're not really, if you got so many plans for right after Shabbos and Mamash to Shal Shudas is driving you nuts and it's taking 15, 20 minutes extra and you got to leave. Okay, I'm not talking about a show on bias issues where the wife doesn't even understand what Shabbos is. But, you know, you're missing it. You're missing the point. So the world to come isn't more than Shal Shudas. You know, it's just a longer Shal Shudas that never ends. And there's no gefilte fish. Okay, you know, then there's no singing. It's just being with Hashem. It's being with Hashem. It just never ends. So it's like, so if you're the guy that always looked at the clock and it's 5:42, and really we hold too long. At the bayit it's 5:35. So I can really end 5:35. The rabbi's being way too machmer on us, a whole 8 minutes longer. And they daven marv before even the 42 minutes. So when it's mamish that minute, we didn't waste 1 minute from the weekday. Right? So now they come to Olam Haba and they say, when's it ending? It ain't. Oh, you give up. Yeah, it's mamish Gehenim. That Gan Eden will be Gehenim for you. And you see all these other Baal Tshuvas who are having a great time in Gan Eden, and they're jumping up and down, and they go, yeah, wow. And everybody's excited. You look there, it's like you're watching a foreign film with no subtitles. It's like watching a foreign film with no subtitles, and you don't know the foreign language. Everybody else knows it. They're going, oh, that's an amazing movie. I just don't have the subtitles. So you're not going to get there. There's going to be nothing to do there. You know? To tell a story with the Yismach Moshe, he wanted to know what the next world was going to be like. So a big tzaddik like that. So Hashem shows him a vision of it. So what does he see? He sees a vision of old tzaddikim learning on old svarim, learning on broken tables. That's what the world to come is. So he had a chalisha sadas. He felt kind of bad. He says, so what is this? Olam Haba is just a continuation of this world? I mean, right now, I'm an old tzaddik. I'm learning an old svarim, and I'm learning on a broken table. So what's going on? So Hashem said to him, it's not that the tzaddikim live in Gan Eden, but it's in the next world, it's that Gan Eden lives in the tzaddikim. Right? That's what it is. So the outside can look the same, but the inside is different. The Gan Eden is in the tzaddik. Right? And that's something that's nurtured in yourself. It's nurtured in the Gan Eden in this world. You have to cultivate a Gan Eden in this world, and it has to continue into the next world. And the only difference is, in the next world, the obstructions are removed, and you can fully delight in Hashem. But you've got to be experiencing the Gan Eden in this world. If you're not experiencing the Gan Eden, the taste at least, the taste is the Gan Eden in this world, the obstructions. Okay, there's Gan Eden with obstructions. In the next world, the obstructions are gone. That's all. Yeah, so in this world, maybe you're poor and you're hungry while you're in Gan Eden, and the next world, you won't be hungry in Gan Eden. You'll still be, and poor, poverty won't matter. But you're still the old person, still the old safer, but, you know, it's just a pure Gan Eden experience. Yeah?
Is this an extension of what we're learning in the Rambam?
It's all the same. It's mamish, the same as the Rambam. It's like not coincidental, right? That what we're learning in the Rambam at night is mamish. The Rambam is giving to you halachically, okay? And here we're learning it hashkafically. And even the Rambam is forced to go hashkafic, even in his halacha, to make you feel that way. But that's exactly what it is. And that's what the tzaddik is telling us over here. Right? So, you know, you got, that's the main pleasure in the world to come. Right? So let's continue inside. Gan Eden Amiti. What's the real Gan Eden? Dveikus v'Kadosh Baruch Hu. It's being close to Hashem. Cleaving to God. Vim Adam Eina Reitze Dveikus v'Baruch Chas V'Shalom. And if a person doesn't really want to cling to God now, Ma Yaseh v'Gan Eden. So what are you going to do in Gan Eden? Now, of course, this is the classic answer that people give you coming up now. You say to the guy, listen, talk to any Jew, go to any standard Orthodox non-thinking Jew, which there's many of. And just say, so what are you living for? So eventually he'll say, yeah, I want to go to Gan Eden. Okay, good. Good. So what do you think Gan Eden is? Ooh, it's going to be great. It's going to be the best. Okay, what is it? I'm not sure, but they tell me it's the best. So let me tell you what the best is. You're going to be next to Hashem the whole time. And what am I going to do? Just enjoy. You're going to enjoy insights into the Torah. I don't learn any Torah. Yeah. Okay, you're going to insights into this beautiful world that you've been contemplating about. I haven't contemplated much about the world. You're going to say, sorry, man, you ain't going to be enjoying it. If that's the case, then what am I doing? That's a good question. What are you doing? And then the guy will say, wait a minute, doesn't want to feel so bad. Wait a minute, you know what? There's two things. You know what? You know, it's the old, I can have my cake and eat it response. So that's coming up. But the guy will say, here, wait a minute, I have a rejoinder. In this world, I want to, and I'm entitled to enjoy this world. And I don't have to have nothing to do with God. But I'm doing my mitzvahs. I get up and I daven to Hashem. Right? But when I leave this world, something magical is going to happen. Then I will all of a sudden want a different thing. And that will be being close to Hashem. In other words, right now as a human being, I will enjoy steaks, fine dining, fancy homes, the best of everything. And that's what I like here. And as long as I, you know, go through the motions of Yiddishkeit and I go to shul once every Shabbos morning, right? Or I go to an express minyan during the week. Or if I give a little money to tzedakah and I do all that stuff, I do those superficial trappings, which is called Judaism, and I have a Seder where we eat a lot of food and we say a couple Dvar Torahs. You know what? I'm going to go to Olam Haba. And then when I go to Olam Haba, there's going to be a change in my personality. Because now that I will no longer be in this world and I will see that God is what's so special, then somehow, I don't know exactly how, but since it's a different world, anything can happen, I will all of a sudden enjoy being close to God. And that is the response that they kind of say to themselves. So the tzaddik says, Yesh lady, you should know, Shezu machsheves hevel. These are thoughts full of hot air. It's totally not true. Shivar Kasub is from Akdoshim. It writes in the holy writings. Very important rule that you should always remember. We've mentioned it in the past. Shehechen Shemach Shavto Valibo Shalodam Kfum Balamazah. the place where you set up and establish your heart in this world and your thoughts, the way you think and the way you feel in this world, that's what it's going to be in the world to come. Exactly the same way. It isn't going to be any different. The things that you liked in this world are the things you're going to like in the next world. The things you don't like in this world, you won't like in the next world. There's going to be no change that's going to happen. Right? And we told you countless stories about this. Remember, we told you about the wagon driver where the Chiddush HaRim wanted to get to Kutsk and he wanted to go on Erev Shabbos. I'm not going to say over the whole story, just briefly, right? So he's not sure if he should go to Kutsk, and there's this wagon driver says, Rebbe, I'll take you to see your Rebbe, to see the Kutsk Rebbe. So to go from Ger to Kutsk is not exactly next door. Whatever. So they're trying to go, and they're trying, and there's mishaps along the way, and it doesn't look like they're going to make it, and the wagon driver says, no, we'll make it, Rebbe. And he's really trying, and he's whipping the horses, and midway through the trip, one horse dies. Right, he says, but Rebbe, I still think we can make it. Rebbe says, no, really, you could stop off. It's not the end of the... No, Rebbe, I really want you to be Shabbos by your Rebbe. He says, Mommy, she's whipping the horses. And finally, they make it to Kutsk. They, Mommy, she just make it to Kutsk under the wire, like Mommy, maybe a half hour to Shabbos. And as they make it, the second and final horse that the wagon driver had died. And it was the end of his Parnosa. Right? Certainly, the Kutzker, the Ger Rebbe, was going to pay the man for the horses without question. But it was so close to Shabbos, he had to run to the mikveh. He had to just get himself ready for Shabbos. He paid the wagon driver for his service, but for the horses, that would need a little, time. Anyway, he quickly gets there. He has Shabbos. Anyway, what happens is the wagon driver, he felt so bad that his mamish's parnasa. He was an older man, and it was a very taxing trip, and he felt so bad that his parnasa was going to go down the drain. Anyway, he died from a heart attack. He died. So anyway, and the story goes on. So the Kutzke Rebbe, he sees in Shemayim what's happening. The Ger Rebbe sees in Shemayim what's happening to this Jew. This Jew dies. He comes to the world to come. They have to decide what to do with him. So they say, listen, he wasn't such a great Yid. He did a lot of averus. He didn't do some mitzvahs. So there really wasn't a lot designed for him in the world to come. Then came a machlis. Wait a minute. He did a big thing. Mamash, he was moiser nefesh. He gave his life up that the Ger Rebbe should see the Kutzker Rebbe. Said, listen, this is maisa. He gave his life up for that. That's not a small thing. He said, yeah, you're right. You're right. That's not a small thing. But he can't get into Gan Eden. It just doesn't go. So they came up with a compromise. They said, we'll send him to the Olam HaDimyonos. We'll send him to the fantasy world. The world of fantasy. And what does he have? Comes this guy, and this is like, if you know Star Trek, it's like the Nexus in Star Trek. You know Star Trek, you know the Nexus, then you'll know that they're trying to come to approximate that. Right? So what is that? So Olam HaDimyonos, the things you ever wanted in life, that's what you'll get. And that's your reward. So what do you think a wagon driver wants? So he has now, he has mamish, a gold-plated wagon with four white stallions driving on a paved road that never ends. Now, for a Polish, Jewish-Polish carriage driver who goes on the muddy, bumpy roads, it's like mamish, it's mamish's Gan Eden. It's mamish, he'll never have a problem with the horses. He'll just go and go and go and go and go. You know, just like... So look, in the Nexus, they have Kirk chopping wood in the country. You know, and that's what he really always wanted to do, chop wood in the country. So he's chopping wood in the Nexus, right? Same thing. So his mom is enjoying it. So the Ger Rebbe sees what's going on, and the Ger Rebbe says, okay, but still it's only fantasy. So the Rebbe did whatever Rebbe can do, whatever Rebbe's do to pull some strings, echleis, and he somehow got this wagon driver somehow to have some aspect of a real Gan Eden. All right, so you see what it's all about. You see what it's all about. You know, there's another story from the Leif Eliyahu that Rav Lopian would always speak about on Purim, right? Talk about a story, the famous Dibuk story. Famous Dibuk story. Come on, it's in the book here. It's in the instruction. That's even in English. It's even in English. Lev Eliyahu in English. I don't know if they have it. If they published it so old. I don't know. Publishes. I don't know what publishes. Rabbi Kalman Pinsky in Bayit Vagan.
Right.
Okay, printed by Goldberg Press, Jerusalem. Okay, so I don't know, but anyway. So it's in the Hebrew Lev Elio, it's the first edition. Right, so in Kelm there was a merchant who was also a scholar. He went by the name of Rav Notl. He had an only daughter, and he married her to an outstanding scholar, a yeshiva student. He gave a big dowry, and he promised to take care of their needs while his son-in-law was studying Torah. And it went for many, many years. And it was a good work agreement. And then finally, the years ended, and now it was time for them to fend for themselves. So the wife wanted them to be able to maintain themselves. So the husband said, listen, I can't part from my studies. You know, I can't just leave my studies and just become a businessman. So she persuaded him to use the dowry to open up a business, assuring him that she'd only ask him to come 2 hours a day, just to help out with the books, because I need a little help. She says, okay, if I can learn the rest of it, that's fine. So that agreement went on for about 3 months. However, as you know, typically the 2 hours turn to four, that turn to eight, that turn to a whole day, and the guy becomes so immersed in the business, he has no time to open up a gemara. Right? Then one night after midnight, when the Shabbos ends, she went out to the backyard to pour away a bucket of dirty water, and the snow was falling, one of those spiritually negative moments, as we know, the nighttime, snow time, it's all negatively charged spiritual moments, dirty water, space, and a big storm, and she comes back into the house after depositing the water. She looks like she's been strangled, and she can't utter a word. She's alive, but she's like, and she can't talk. She feels like she's strangled, and husband calls a doctor, doesn't help. They go to many specialists. They travel to Vienna. Nothing can help. Then they think maybe there's a dibbuk inside of her, a wandering soul that has no reprieve. So they go to different Kabbalists, and indeed they find out that there's a dibbuk, and they're able to ask questions, and a voice is coming out of her stomach and not from her lips. So they know that there's a dibbuk. And then he asks certain questions to know if it's really a dibbuk or not. And he asks him, who was accompanying you? He says, there's five destructive angels waiting for me to come out of this body to let me have it. Right, so he says, this guy is a real dibbuk. He knows what's going on. It's not a fake, right? So then they start asking him what's the story. So he says, well, many, many years ago, he was a yeshiva student and in Brisk, whatever, and he went off the path of Yiddishkeit. He went to Africa. He did every affair in the book, and it was mamish a terrible guy. And one day in Africa, he falls off a wagon. It gets an accident, and he died instantly. They say, why didn't you at least do tshuva? He says, it happened so fast, I didn't even have a chance to do tshuva. So I say, so what do you have against this woman? What are you bothering this woman? Right? So he says, listen, her mother and her husband's mother, both of them have already passed on to the next world, have made many prayers in heaven, insist that I come into her body and bring suffering upon her, because she's going to lose her whole world to come, because she took her husband away from Torah learning. And that's what I was sent here to correct things, and you know, and somehow get this message across. Anyway, so this story could take an hour, right? So as soon as the Kabbalist hears all this, he calls the husband in. He says, "I want you to promise to go back to learning Torah and to stop with this business." And he says, "Yes, yes, yes, I'll do whatever you want." And then he tells him, he promised that you should learn Mishnayos on the wandering soul's behalf and give a certain amount of tzedakah to the shul, etc., etc. It all happened, and they go through the whole way to exorcise the neshama from this woman's body, and he escapes. The whole story. So, and then this story was said over, and it's a true story. They verify the story and everything. And then there were some additions to the story that was said later on as people said over the story. Said, I heard this story a little bit with a few more details. And here's one of the details. And this is why I'm telling you the whole story, not just telling you about dibbuks and exciting things. It was about this. So after a while, this dibbuk, all of a sudden, in the middle of the interrogation, after he says that there were the five angels and this and that, all of a sudden this dibbuk starts uttering vile obscenities. He's saying terrible, filthy things. And everybody had to close their ears. So then the tzaddik who's dealing with this dibbuk, he says, I don't understand. A few minutes ago, you're screaming in terror because these angels are threatening to destroy you, right? So you know how bad things are. So what do you have to saying such vulgar things when you know the emes? So this is what the dibbuk answered. He says, know you, that if one does not do tshuva and clean oneself from a sin, the soul lusts for evil in the beyond as it did here below. The way you leave this world, that's what's out there. It's the same thing. Things don't change. Even when you're in the Olam HaEmes. Even when you're in the true world. And there's many Gemaras and Gemara Brachas, Gemara Gittin, talk all about these things. People leave this world and they still, you know, I always was troubling this Gemaras. All these Gemaras I've learned for years until I saw this piece. Well, many Gemaras that talk about people who are in the next world and they're still acting infantile. You know, talk about a spirit of a woman who was buried in a grave and she's talking to the other spirit and says, maybe, you know, when you come back, you can bring me a brush for my hair. A brush for your hair, you know. Because even when they're dead, they're still worried that their hair should be nice, even though they don't have any hair. That's what they're still thinking about. You always think about how good you're going to look. Even when you're dead in the grave, you're still worrying about how good you're going to look. You know. And then when Unkelus visits people who had left this world, real Rishoyim, like Yoshka and Titus and these kinds of people, and Bilam says, you know, what about joining the Jewish people? He says, you know what? You should destroy them and go against them and punish them and this and that. But you're in the world to come. You know the truth already? It doesn't matter. The way you leave the world, that's the way you are. Okay, so that's why God makes Gehenna for us, to try to fix us up a little bit, to cure these things. But Gehenna can only take away the negative. It can't create any positive. If you never like being with God, you're still not going to like being with God. And that's what the tzaddik is saying over here. This is a very important thing. If you want to, you want the world to come, you want an eternal existence. So what is going to be that eternal existence if not being close to Hashem? And this is something you didn't want. Something you never wanted. Anytime there's an opportunity to be close to Him, you want to learn a little Gemara? No, I can't. Why? You know, every excuse in the book. Every excuse in the book. So then really it's not that important to you. Right? If the rabbi speaks 10 minutes too long, you're already looking at the clock. It's never another 10 minutes of Torah. You know, so what can I do? You know, or you fall asleep. It's not that interesting. It's not that interesting. Right? So that's where it's going to always be. Let me just finish this paragraph, then I'll take your question. Nimtza comes out. If in this world your heart and your thoughts are not connected to God, but for other things, that's the way things are going to be in the world to come. And even, he says more, even if then, you say, oh, now I see the truth. Okay, now I want to be close to Hashem. Lo yukol, you won't be able to. Keep al korcha, because against your will, you're attached to that which you are attached in this world. You can't get it out of you. You can't get it out of you. That's what he's saying. You can't change it. Kloimer, meaning to say, ha'adam l'yukal l'chal l'chal, you can't split the things up. You can't differentiate. To say, v'olam hazeh, in this world, lo liyos davak HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not to be close to God. V'olam habah, in the next world, Cain, yes, to be connected to God. No. Ella, it's either one or the other. Either you're attached to God in this world and in the next world. Or you're not connected in this world and the next world. It goes together. It's a complete package. And although in the brackets he says, there are various mystical tikkunim, corrections for a person who didn't use his life wisely, but this isn't the place to get into it. We're not going to talk about Gilgal. We're not talking about tzaddikim interfering with the grand plan of the world. We're not going to talk about dibbuks and other things like this, you know, which are very, very painful and things you would surely wish to avoid and ultimately, you know, doesn't make the ultimate corrections the way it could easily be done if you make the change in your life now. What? Ve'ein kan mokom laharich. This is not the place to go into detail. Right? Nimtza comes out. Just be patient, I'll get to you. Shall Adam Lahavin, a person has to understand. If a person in this world, while he's still in this world, is not attached to God, and feeling that attachment, it's out of necessity, the way it must be, that even in the Garden of Eden and in the world to come, he won't be attached to Hashem. Vim kein lo yia ma la so sham, he won't have what to do there. Ala Adam, therefore, ala Adam lehis. Okay, let's just stop for a minute. Okay, question.
Quick question. I mean, the world to come is all spiritual, and then some of the things that are trapped in here are physical, or then if that's removed from the equation, shouldn't it be? Some of the things that are distracting people here from being close to it, which them are not present.
No, because that's the point. Even though the distractions, the world to come, are removed, the distractions of this world are removed in the world to come, it can't create what didn't exist. In other words, if you were a person who was close to Hashem, you are close to Hashem. And whenever you're in front of a Gemara, it's your greatest pleasure. And your Shabbos is mamish, a Shabbos, your mamish feel like you're in the world to come. And you feel close to Hashem. And Nebuch, you know, when you go to work, you still want to think of Hashem, but Lamaisa, you have to count change. You have to be, and you can't be doing that. So those were the disturbances within your always wanting to be next to Hashem. Okay, then the world to come, those disturbances won't be there. And you'll go back to that position that you always were in this world of feeling close to Hashem whenever you had the chance to feel that way. Those disturbances will be taken. But if, let's say, there's a person who says, you know I should be learning, and I know I should be spending better quality Shabbos. But what does the guy do? He works mamish 6 days a week, mamish 20 hours a day, and he has no time for spiritual development. And he doesn't develop spiritually but he wants it, but never does it. He wants this thing called closeness to God. He wants this thing. He'd love to know the whole Shas. And I'm not saying he doesn't. He really does. But he never enabled himself to say, you know what? I gotta work less. And he didn't. And he always worked the same. And by the time Shabbos came around, he was so dead tired from all his work, he almost slept through most of the Shabbos. We're not saying he hasn't even done mitzvahs. And he still davens 3 times a day in the express minyan. And he still goes to at least Saturday morning, at least by 10:30. So he at least comes for the rabbi's drush. Right? But he's mamish, and then when he makes kiddush at night. But mamish, he's so tired he has to sleep, goes to sleep 9:30 Friday night, and then Shabbos afternoon he has to go to sleep for a couple hours. And then Matzi Shabbos, his wife says, you know, we have to have fun. It's okay, I have to have fun, we go to the movies. Right? And then Sunday he has to take his kids to hockey and this and that and everything else. And even when he could have maybe put his foot down and say, I want to learn the Torah, he doesn't. Okay, so all those instructions will go away, but you haven't gotten close to God. It's not going to magically come. You don't. It's a feeling that has to be cultivated. It has to really happen, and not wished. If it's wished, you can wish all you want, and it could be. It takes years of training to want to learn to enjoy that, right? And one can't say, you know what, I didn't have the chance. Because we know Hashem's going to say, what are you talking about? You know, and then what happens? You come to the world to come, and you've got all your excuses lined up. Your mamish got them lined up. You got them lined up. And you say, Hashem, listen, what do you want from me? You didn't make me wealthy. You didn't make me wealthy. And if you would have made me wealthy, if I was born into a wealthy family, then I would have had time to study Torah. Then God's going to say, were you any poorer than Hillel? Hillel, who was so poor, he's mamish, so poor, he only made, he made one tropek a day from the work that he did, which was mamish pennies. And he'd give half of it for his family, which wasn't enough, and to get into the yeshiva, he had to pay half a tropek to get in. And he paid the half of his income to get into yeshiva, half his income for his children's Jewish education. Half. Okay? He paid it. And when he didn't have the half that day, they wouldn't let him in. He went on the skylight to listen. He froze. So, what's your excuse? You have no excuse. Whatever excuse you give, God's going to show another Jew who showed you know you could do it even without that. I was too rich to give you an example for a rich guy. I had a big Yetzer Hara to give an example for me. That whoever you want, whatever you're going to pick and make, it's going to be worse. I'm sure it's going to be worse. Let's say, base, I don't know, let's say you went to York University. I don't care. You know, so I'll give you another guy who went to York University who did establish time for learning Torah, just like you. Same graduating class. No difference. Same job. And he was learning Torah. And he was connected to God. Why? Because he knew how to set his priorities. He knew that, you know what? A 2,000 square foot home is enough. I don't need a 5,000 square foot home. And I don't have to incur such expenses that force me to work so much, blah, 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 and to go around the mulberry bush. Yeah. So you have the free will choice. Do you want it or don't you want it? And you know, we all know that if you really want something, you'll give everything away. Because that same guy, he's going to say, well, what do you expect from me? You expect me to give all my money away? He says, well, you know, when your wife was deathly ill, you did sell the house. And you did go into hock. And you wouldn't give away, and you did give away everything for what you loved. So now, be honest. Did you love God? No. And that's what's going to happen. That's the frightening day of reckoning. It's the frightening day of reckoning where every excuse you use is exposed and you look like a fool. You look like a fool. And then Hashem will say, okay, listen, you know, but still you're a tire yid. You're still a good yid. You still did do something. Okay, so where do they send you? They send you to the fantasy world. Where you get to do what you want to do all day long. I mean, every free minute you watched hockey. So watch hockey. So watch hockey. But watch the best of the best. Right? Every time you're gonna watch someone, the game of the century. And the next week, yeah? You watch the Leafs win every championship. Right? And that's gonna be, and that's gonna be what you're gonna get. Okay, you know. While you're watching other people, they're having a better time with something better. Right? So that's why there's so many Gilgulim, and that's why the spiritual realms are in havoc, because we're trying to get these people in for all the mistakes that they're making. That's why people are coming back, and that's why there's Holocaust, and that's why there's so many different things that shouldn't be happening, but God's gotta find a way to get everybody in. Right, because we didn't bother to get in the way we should ourselves. So there's no magic, and it's a very sad thing. It's a very sad thing that, you know, most Jews are going to be in for big surprises. Most Orthodox, card-carrying Orthodox Jews are in for the surprise of their life. Mamish. Yeah?
Are you saying what you're attached to in this world, you'll be attached to in the world to come?
Yeah. And what you're not attached to in this world, you can't be attached. That's the bigger point. Mm.
So
that's the bigger point. Do they not exist? Again, they could be under certain circumstances. Just different. Listen, what if you didn't get along with your wife? You're going to have her for the rest of your life in the world to come.
What if you
did? Right? If you did, it depends if you're worthy for it. What if she's not worthy for it? What if you're worthy to go to Ghana and she's not? Right? Or the opposite. She's worthy and you're not. And then it's Gilgal time. Okay? Right? You know, it's Gilgal time. You know, and it could be, you know, you're worthy, but, you know, the perfect scenario is a bias nemen b'Yisrael, a home where the husband and wife together, the Shekhinah was there. Then one thing, you're guaranteed you're with your spouse, and your spouse is sitting in a shir, and he's mamish enjoying it, and the wife is so happy that the husband's happy enjoying the shir, and they're sitting at the same table. That's the guarantee. She's gonna enjoy knowing that this year is going on. I don't know if she's gonna be attending this year. I don't know. I'm not gonna say. I don't know. It's beyond it. It's beyond. It's one soul. They're one soul. It's like one unit. It's one unit. It doesn't matter. It's not important. It's not important. They'll be equally happy. That's for sure. They'll be equally happy. There's no question about it. They'll be equally happy. But otherwise, you know, it could be, yeah, they'll both be happy watching the Leafs play. It could be. Right? So says the Tzaddik at the very bottom of the page now. Ala Odam al Ha'odam lihis b'nein b'kach rabos. A person should be thinking a lot about this. Shuma abedas anitzri shalal, that he's gonna be losing his eternity. Al Yedei came through this. Because he wasn't bound up and clinging to God in this world. Ha'olam haba, the world to come, nikra olam shekulo tov, is called a world that is only good. It's only good. That's what it's called. That's the Rambam we learned. It's olam shekulo tov. It is entirely good. There's nothing but good there. So now, what's the good? Mal ha'tov she'esham. So what's the good that's there? Because of Ramchal, it's already said. He quoted and we quoted it. Vani kirvas elokim litov. For me, closest to God, that's what's good. And more than that, vizula zeh, and anything else, mashiachshavu b'nei adam litov, what anybody else thinks is good, eina ella hevel v'shav nita, it's only foolishness and mistaken. It's not this idea, you know, good is learning Torah and having a fancy car. No. Fancy car is not good. Neutral, but it's not good. Learning Torah is good. Close to Hashem, that's good. Close to Hashem is good. Anything else, nothing else is good. So what's the world to come? If the world to come is only good, so what is it? It's only close to Hashem. That's it. Nothing else. Right? This idea, you know, I like being a Jew and I like the profession that I'm in. I do a lot of satisfaction out of the profession. I spend a lot of time on my profession and I get a lot of good self-esteem from my profession. Da 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 da. It's wonderful, but none of it's good. It's neutral. It's neutral. And a person has to realize not to overextend his time in neutral areas. I'm not saying you shouldn't do the job properly and honestly, but don't make a career out of it. You make a career out of being an Eved Hashem. That's what your career is, and that's the only good that's there. So the world to come is not going to have, okay, I'm going to go to, you figure, the world to come is going to be like your trips to Miami, you know? You know, you go to early min, you get a daf yomi, then you play a round of golf, you know? Then you have a fancy lunch, then there's another shir for an hour, you know? And then you play another round of golf or shuffleboard or this and that, go swim in the pool, walk on the boardwalk, daven mincha marv, have a fancy dinner, then go for another walk and maybe take another shir, and that's the omba. No, omba is only going to the shir. Everything else, that wasn't necessary. That was only a means to be able to go to the shir. Right? So if you go on those big trips, and okay, you know, the wife schleps you into the shir, but really you like the party room, and you like the golf, and you like that. It ain't going to be in the world to come. It's not going to be a lot to do. It's really, really scary, huh? Haray, what do we have? She'ein tov achar el kirvas Hashem. There is no other good but closest Hashem. And the first is not close and attached to God in this world. He has no business and no connection to a world that is only good. And out of necessity, perforce, in order to merit the good of Gan Eden in the world to come, and this goodness of Lekirvas Elokim Litov, being close to Hashem, that is good for me. It has to be out of necessity. That person must live that way in this world. You have to live with the concept of closeness to Hashem. That is what's good for me. In the clinging to God. And only then will you enjoy what Olam Haba is all about. So the tzaddik here, as he's coming close to ending this first section of the book, he wants you to understand, do you want this or not? And he's trying to persuade you, very few people want to give away their full eternity and the maximum pleasure that you can get in the world to come. But you're going to have to work for it here, and you got to make some big decisions. So, Mirtz Hashem, we should be zoicha to think more about this.